Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tunnel Vision, a show brought to you by USCFootball.com. I'm your host, Keely Orr, joined by Shotgun Spratling and Ryan Abraham. I almost combined both of your guys' names, but I didn't.
Shotgun Abraham.
Shotgun Abraham and Ryan Spratling. Interesting combo. We got a fun show for you guys today. We'll be talking about USC and the NFL draft. The draft starts on Thursday, ends on Saturday, so we'll talk about Trojans, potential Progens, if you will. We're going to talk about the hashtag Free Reggie Bush movement that has stirred up once again. I feel like it's a movement that has never really stopped.
Free Reggie,
apparently. And then we're going to talk about player development. Ryan, you posted an interesting story today looking at some data that was done over 5 years about USC's player development. So we'll talk about that. And of course, we'll be taking your live calls, 512-4-TUNNEL. Our intern Micah is screening calls in the next room, so that will be fun. Make sure you call, maybe tease them a little bit, you know, intern hazing, if you will. Yeah. And then, of course, you can get a hold of us, either phone calls or comments, questions, concerns on three different streams, Facebook, YouTube, and Periscope. You can put whatever you want. We'll talk about it. All of that good stuff. Guys, it's the second week of the off season, if you will. It's...
What was that sound?
Ryan's not happy about it. Happy about it, I can't tell. But first off, let's talk about the NFL draft. Not the same as last year. You know, you're not going to have a Sam Darnold going in the first round. But what are you expecting from the USC guys in the NFL draft?
Yeah, I put up a story yesterday, I think, about the draft. And it's interesting looking at it. USC has the most players drafted by any university, 506, I believe. Someone else said 505, but I believe it's 506 total. And there's, you know, Notre Dame's close, and there's a bunch of schools that are like kind of further down. So I don't think that record's going to be broken this year. Maybe the first round draft pick record could be. That's closer. But looking at, you know, you had the Sam Darnold stuff from last year. This year, there's really nothing like that. And a lot of the mock drafts you look at, and there's so many. There's so many NFL analysts out there now. Mike, I love Daniel Jeremiah. He does a great job. He's now the number one guy at the NFL Network because Mike Mayock, who I also like, is now the GM of the Oakland Raiders. But going forward, there's a lot of them. There's not a lot that go all seven rounds. So when you're trying to do a story on the USC players this year, you kind of need ones that are going out beyond round three. There's a lot of round one mocks. There's a lot of, you know, more round one through three. Not as many all seven rounds. That's a lot harder, obviously. There's trades and all kinds of things. But that's where the majority of the USC players looks like they're going to be drafted. Thursday's all round one. Friday's round two and three. You might see a Chuma Adoga in that Friday round. I don't think any of the other USC players would be drafted until Saturday. So it's, it's hit or miss. You don't know.
Shotgun seems like he doesn't agree with that statement.
I think guys could go as early as the third round. I think Chuma has a potential of moving up to the second round is his ceiling. I think a couple of the other guys that are kind of in that fringe middle of the draft could potentially go in the third round.
Okay.
I think it depends on how the draft plays out. You look at a guy like Iman Marshall, you know, some teams probably have him rated high, some of them don't as much. What position are they looking him at? You know, at cornerback, there's a number of guys that are going to go late in that first round, you know, between 15 and 30. But how many of them go? And then how many, you know, how does the draft kind of flow that way? There's a couple of positions where USC players, where I don't think it's too strong, too deep, so they can move up and eventually be taken in the third or fourth rounds when maybe you would expect them to go maybe a round or two later.
Yeah.
And I think Chuma Adoga is another guy that he could bump up around just because I don't think there's a ton. And it also depends on where teams are looking at him. I think he's versatile enough that teams may be looking at him as a tackle and a guard. So that versatility might help push him up if teams are, you know, kind of they want to take an offensive lineman and they're kind of torn on whether they want a guard or a tackle. Hey, you can do both. So that might be something that helps him out. But it's very hard to do. There's no way to get a seven-round mock draft correct.
No. There's no way to get a first-round mock
draft. It's very, very difficult to get a first-round
They don't even get the top five picks right. Like, it's very, very hard to do. And they change it all the time. I think they're kind of silly. I like a lot of people that do it. I do think they're kind of silly. Like, it's really – you can't predict trades and all this stuff.
Part of it is the trades, but also it's become where you – at one point, you could get the information like, yeah, they really like this player and stuff. But now it's become such a – you know, the NFL has become so large itself that it's become a cloud of misinformation.
Yes.
You know, there's so much noise being thrown out, you know. And you look at a guy like, Patrick Mahomes. Bruce Arians love Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs took him right in front of him.
Yeah.
But so if he knows, like, okay, well, they might like a quarterback too, he's not going to say, yeah, I love this guy. You know, and, you know, we really like this guy. We'll see. And then the Chiefs are like, well, I know he's, you know, or someone right behind them has to trades up in front of them because they're like, I know the Cardinals are going to take him.
Right.
So it that's it, there's so much misinformation out there because of how, you know, how valuable a first round draft pick is. You know, a first round draft pick can completely change your team, you know, especially at the quarterback position. You look at the Chiefs in particular. But, you know, so I think that that's why it's become so much more difficult. I think maybe in the mid 80s to early to mid 90s, you probably could get a more true sense because, you know, the GMs are telling, yeah, we really like this guy. You know, if he's there, we'll take him. If not, it's this guy. And, you know, sometimes it's just position of need that you need. Some GMs take, you know, best available, and that's what a lot of them are, is studying what the GMs have done before,
yeah,
and what the team needs, and then deciding, okay,
you're trying to project where they're going to go. Yeah. I mean, last year, when did we know Baker Mayfield was going to go first? Like the day before the draft. I mean, it was something crazy. Like, everyone assumed like Sam Darnold or whatever. I mean, if you remember, Haslam came to the USC Pro Day. Everyone's like, oh, Sam Darnold's going to Cleveland. He's going to Cleveland.
Yeah.
And that changed at the very end. So, I mean, we don't know. You think Kyler Murray's going to go first? It's, I guess we're still hearing that in the drafts tomorrow. But for the USC players, I mean, I think like a guy like Marvell Tell seemed to help himself. You know, he jumped 42 inches at the NFL Combine. I think he had a good broad jump. But he might be looked at as more of a corner. Iman Marshall, I think, did some good things. You know, he could be more of a safety where you might have both those guys shifting positions. You know, there's some interesting players there with Cameron Smith, Porter Gustin, who came out to have a positive drug test, which his agent said was for Adderall, something he was cleared for, so that was okay. Was he tested for something else? I mean, we don't really know at this point, but that at least came out today. Does that affect his draft stock? You know, Cameron Smith was a high production guy, actually jumped. He had like a 39-inch vertical leap at the combine. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those guys I think are the best. Those dudes have the best chance of getting drafted. You might see someone else sort of sneak in. And then it could be a lot of unrestricted free agents at the end, like a Janie Harris and like Cedric Ware. Guys like that I think you'll see sign on, you know, someplace and then, you know, try to make the team.
The interesting thing about Porter Gustin is that they labeled it as a PED, but the official way that they do it is that during the season – Adderall is listed as a PED, but then in the offseason it's listed as a recreational drug. So it's possible that Porter Gustin could have been taking something else, and we don't know fully.
Yeah, I mean, his agent is the one that said Adderall, so it wasn't like this report came out and said, you know, there might have been something else. We don't know at this point. I'm sure the NFL people will. If he gets drafted in like the fourth round, like, oh, it's fine. If not, then maybe there was something more to that.
Yeah.
And there was a, you know, I think Brady McCullough at the LA Times had a, you know, he basically went through the paper trail, the emails. So he was cleared, you know, that he was approved for Adderall at least. Now, when you get a false test, they don't tell you what the drug is that you have tested falsely for because the Players Association does not allow that. So in the past, players have, I'm not saying this is what Porter Gustin, because he was approved for Adderall, but in the past other players have been busted for other things, have said something, you know, they'll change the drug
they
or what
it
is
Adderall, yeah.
And they'll say it was Adderall or they'll say something else because, you know, it has a lesser doesn't have as bad of a connotation to the public to take Adderall versus steroids.
Yeah,
so I know a lot of people jumped out and like, oh my god, Porter Gustin on steroids. Well, we don't necessarily know that.
Yeah.
No.
And, you know, the fact that there is a paper trail that he was cleared for Adderall says that, you know, there at least that there was something there with that. So I think there's more. I think that lends more credence to the agent story on that as well, that, you know, he was taking Adderall for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Makes sense. We actually have a caller.
Nice. Yeah. Don't forget live callers, 512-4-TUNNEL. We want to get the live callers. Put Micah to work over there in the other room.
Yeah. Put the intern to work. It's our buddy Brandon from Wisconsin.
Yes, Brandon.
Brandon, what's up?
How's it going?
Hey, what's your question?
So my question is, out of all the draft-eligible players this year, which one has the best chance of becoming a first-round draft pick?
Interesting.
So for are you talking the guys like that have come out of USC already?
Yep.
Next year's group.
Oh, next year's group.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So looking at next year's group, let's pull that up. and see.
Michael Pittman Jr. is the first guy that jumps off the top of my head.
I would say Michael Pittman.
But it's also still tough because receivers, you know, you have to be fast and physical. So I think he could be like N'Keal Harry, who's a guy who's, you know, kind of a first or second, late first, early second type of guy. So, you know, don't know that necessarily he'll be that guy either. I think that's the first one just pops to mind. I mean, I'm trying to think of who else is out there.
Yeah, for seniors, you're talking Daniel Metorbebe, who's, you know, he hasn't been playing. Clayton Bradley, Jacob Daniel, Christian Rector, you know, probably not. Jordan Iosefa, probably not. John Houston, probably not. Dominic Davis, no. Of the juniors, like would Vi or Stephen Carr, like, I mean.
Not right now.
Yeah, not the way they are. Tyler Vaughns, I mean, there's some potential there. Like Josh Vallow, no. I mean,
Austin Jackson and maybe a guy like Jay Tufele are the two guys that maybe could make a huge jump this season. But they would have to produce a lot of numbers this year because they don't have the track record from the last couple of years. So you'd have to have a really big season from them to jump in. Otherwise, I think I'd still go with Michael Pittman would be the best chance.
He seems to be like, that would be the best. You know, we think he's going to be a captain. I think there would be a decent shot. But he would have to have a huge year, I think. Like it's,
huge year, run well, do everything, you know, be, you know, not have injury concerns going into the draft, those type of things. But, you know, there's just not a lot of candidates there. It's not like, you know, in some draft classes at USC, you've been like, who do you think is going to be the first round pick? This year, it's will there be one?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's you're trending towards no rather than, you know, being a definite yes or anything. So I just don't think that there's a, you know, when you come off a 5-7 season, it's hard to have anyone be a first round talent. So now they're going to have to come off and play very well, and we'll see if the production can match the potential at the next level. That's what teams will be looking for.
Yeah, think about a guy like N'Keal Harry, who I guess he'll probably go like later in the first round and like a super talent, like
maybe
one of the
second
most,
round. Yeah,
I mean, and he's like, you know, one of the better players we've seen in the Pac-12 in the last few years, and he might not go in the first round. So Michael Pittman, I think, would have to have a pretty big year to go in the first round. So it's not looking great, Brandon in Wisconsin. But thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you, Brandon, for the call. While we're on the topic of the draft, I'm going to go to another caller that we have.
Wow.
It is Jaeger, I think I got that right, from Huntington Beach. Hello.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, what's your question for the team?
Is it Jaeger? Well, how do you pronounce your name?
Jagger.
Jagger. Okay, sorry.
Move like Jagger.
Blaming Mike for that one.
From Surf City. What's up, Jagger?
Yes. So for this question, I'd like an answer from all of you guys. But who do you think is the biggest draft bust to ever come out of USC?
So someone that got drafted but just busted out?
Yeah, someone who had like big expectations and just didn't pan out.
Okay. I don't remember what I had for breakfast, so this is going to be tough.
Yeah, this is not my wheelhouse.
Jagger. Okay. Who was someone that just absolutely crapped the bed? Okay. Rob Johnson, if you remember him. I think was a first round draft pick, but was sort of like didn't do much. But then he came in. I think it was for like Mark Brunell and had like one good game or something, and then got like a $25 million contract after that. Like this was a while back. That was a good one. Are you pulling up some?
I'm just trying to look at the list of draft picks and look at who were the first round picks, because I don't think you would say the biggest bust would be anyone not in the first round.
Yeah.
Mike Williams with the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
His career. Now, he came back later with, I think it was the Seahawks. So, he still played four or five years, but
he was like a top 10 pick or something.
Being a top 10 pick, you know, that puts a lot more onus.
It was the other draft, the supplementary draft. I mean, you could say Matt Leinart was
He was a top 10 pick in the regular draft.
Was it? I thought
he tried to get into the other draft and it wouldn't.
Oh, okay. Matt Leinart was a top 10 pick.
Matt Leinart's definitely up there. Sam Baker, the offensive tackle, went to the Falcons. Being a Falcons fan,
he played for a while.
He was not very good.
But I mean, you know, if you're playing, like, that's.
I mean, you could even go somewhere like Kenichi Udeze because, you know, career was cut short.
But
that's not a bust.
That
depends on how you're defining it.
That's not a bust.
If you spend a first-round draft pick, a top 10, 20, 10, 15 pick on someone, you expect them to be in your organization for 8 years.
Yeah.
But that's not something he can control.
I didn't say it was something he can control.
But usually the connotation.
The pick was a bust.
Where'd Matt Barkley go? Was he a third rounder or something? Or
Barkley was later than that, I think. Fourth round.
Yeah, so that's not really a bust.
Yeah, that's going back to 2000. That's the ones I would pick off that group.
Yeah, interesting.
Hmm. I mean,
Where was Rob Johnson? Look for him.
John Michaels, offensive tackle.
Rob Johnson was a first-round pick?
Fourth round.
Oh, okay. So he's not really a bust. But he was a bust later because he had like one good like game or something and then got this enormous contract off it, and it was just – it wasn't –
Would you count Reggie Bush as a bust?
No. He won a Super Bowl. He had like 1,000-yard rushing seasons. Like he did a lot of good things. He, you know.
Okay.
Todd Marinovich?
Yeah.
Marinovich is definitely one. He was a – I think he went like 25th or something to the Raiders. And is that right?
I mean, there's some offensive linemen that I don't know anything about because it's from the 80s. Dave Cadigan, James Fitzpatrick, you know, yeah, Dwayne Bickett, Ken Rutgers. You know, these are guys I just don't, you know, this was when I was being born. So I don't have a background on
when you were birthed.
Yeah.
Birthed.
To say whether or not.
YouTube seems to say Matt Leinart.
Yeah.
Leinart's definitely.
Taylor Mays.
Mays was second round, was he? He really didn't do much, though.
The second round.
Yeah.
I mean, he stayed in the league for like 6 years, whereas Leinart was like gone in like
five. He had, I mean, Leinart had a chance, but then Kurt Warner comes in, and it just didn't really, it never really worked out for him. I think he could have done well, you know?
I think Leinart is definitely up there, and I think Leinart would agree with you on that.
Yeah,
but he was also probably the greatest USC quarterback.
Right.
In college, yeah. So.
Who was a better pro, Matt Castle, and you know, and they, yeah, he couldn't beat out Leinart in college.
Alrighty, well, I think we addressed that.
Yeah.
pretty well.
Jagger, thank nice you. Job.
Jagger.
Didn't I say Jagger? Oh, it is Jagger. Sorry.
Sorry, Jagger.
You
botched it again.
I botched a lot.
Can't take you guys anywhere.
Oh wow. Well, thanks for the live calls, the blitz of live calls there. But I mentioned Reggie Bush, maybe incorrectly. But. #FreeReggieBush was in the top of the show. That kind of started up again based on an Arash Markazi column in the LA Times. It's based on the fact that Reggie Bush is joining Fox Sports for basically the rival to College Game Day. And the problem that he's facing is that Reggie Bush is still banned from USC. So say the show was going to cover a USC game, Reggie Bush can't go to USC practice. So it kind of it causes this weird thing where Reggie is still banned from USC. And the thing that came out of Arash's article was that USC had tried on three separate occasions to essentially appeal the NCAA's decision of, hey, can we not ban Reggie for life? And they essentially said no. And when Arash reached out to the NCAA for a comment, the NCAA said no comment. So,
which they're good at. They're very good at giving you no comment.
True. So it just seems, Ryan, like this saga just continues.
It does. There was also a our friend Sports by Brooks, who was on the show when he like came back out of retirement or wherever he was. He's a big push on that too. Matt Leinart went on one of the ESPN radio shows talking about that. They tweeted that out earlier. It's been a thing on our message boards. I think like a year ago, I said I'm going to make this like a campaign of my own, and it sort of lost steam.
Shotgun and I did see Reggie Bush at the playoff game at Oaks Christian. I did interview Reggie, and he said he wants to be back at USC. Got to plug my own content.
Yeah, and you know, Dan Weber brought up like if you know he wants to come to USC practice because he's covering college football now. He's an analyst, and the NCAA says no. There could be some lawsuit there because you're not allowing him to you know do his job and all this kind of stuff. Absolutely. So there's some weird stuff going on. It's dumb. Like Chris Weber was banned for 10 years.
Yeah.
Reggie Bush has been banned for more than that. Is there any particular reason? Like, what? I mean, I don't know. Like, he didn't like go out and you know kill a bunch of bunnies or something. Like, this was like, you know, he didn't do.
It seems very personal.
Yes,
it does not seem personal. Objective. It just seems very weird. And having sat through the trial, it seems just very weird all around.
Through the Tommy Nair trial.
Yes. Sorry.
And also, because you have the college basketball scandal going on, and now suddenly there are college football programs that are being, you know, their names are being thrown around by witnesses and stuff as, you know, having paid off people. It's going to bring the question up more and more as the continuation of these two different scandals go on. The admission scandal, and which they're still investigating, and there's more people being involved in that, and as well as the college basketball bribery scandal.
Yeah.
And how those play out, I think, will ultimately impact Reggie Bush's standing with the NCAA, because I think they're going to get to the point where they're going to be like, can we really keep this one guy out of, you know, from going back to his university. You know, even if he doesn't have to, you know, he didn't get the Heisman back or whatever it is, but you're really going to keep him from associating with a school that he went to for multiple years and maybe he has a degree. I don't think he has the degree because he left early and since he's not allowed back in school. But potentially, like, if he wanted to go back and get his degree, can he not do that because the NCAA rules?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of messed up. When it's looking like, oh, well, there was bribery and people accepting money in a lot of different places in the country. Are you going to just pick out one person and say, well, you were the first one that we said did it. So therefore we're going to keep you out. But everybody else, we're just,
right.
It's too late for us to make any judgments on them, I guess.
And USC needs to step up to the plate here and is like, look, this ain't happen. Stop. It's over. Like, they need to show some huevos. Like, they need to come in and say, this is over. We're going to let Reggie Bush come back. We're going to have a freaking parade. He's going to, we're going to put his number back up in the Coliseum. We're going to petition to get, to reinstate the Heisman with the Heisman Trust and all that stuff. All that stuff needs to happen. And the thing that people don't understand, if you're a USC fan or, if you're like a Notre Dame fan on Twitter, you're like, he cheated. It was different. This wasn't like what Chris Webber didn't get paid by boosters to like come to the school. I mean, that's what happened there. I believe that's what happened with Chris Webber. And you saw Cam Newton, like, was, his family was paid money so he would go to that school. This was a wannabe agent paying Reggie Bush to leave the school. Yeah. Like, it's a very different. If there was if any evidence of, like, USC paid money to get Reggie Bush in and you won a bunch of games, that, I mean, it would at least make a little bit more sense. But it wasn't, USC didn't acquire Reggie Bush and his talent illegally or against any of the rules. That's why this is baffling. Like, it does seem personal, Keeley. Why the heck would, his dad and his family taking extra benefits from some wannabe agent being the worst thing in the world? What if North Carolina having all these crazy, stupid classes that don't exist and getting, there's things that are way, way worse. It doesn't make any sense. The NCAA never sets, they say that, it set a precedent and everything. But when you kind of compare things, complete apples and oranges, you just don't understand how this is even possible. So you have to hashtag free Reggie Bush. I'm behind this 100%. This is just dumb hypocrisy by the NCAA, and it just needs to end.
And it's also similar. You look at, our buddy Joey Kaufman is now covering Ohio State. One of their coaches has just been thrown into the mix as far as the college basketball bribery scandal. One of their football coaches alleging that he asked someone to pay money to a player so they would stay in school. It's not even USC saying, no, here's some money, stay for your senior year.
Right.
It's the opposite of that. It's someone saying, hey, here's some money, don't go back for your senior year. So it just doesn't make sense when you compare it to the other things. Just like you said, like, they don't do things on precedent, which probably is shows you how much you need to know about the NCAA. But when you do actually compare them, there's no comparison.
What happened didn't benefit the USC football program at all. Like, paying Cam Newton won Auburn a national championship. Like, there's a huge benefit there. Cam Newton should never be able to step foot in the state of Alabama if you want to compare the two things. Whatever happened with Reggie Bush's family getting a house and all that stuff did not help the USC football program at all. So I don't – the fact that he has to be banned from the program doesn't make any sense. There's been plenty of instances where money was paid. It benefited the program. The USC football program was not benefited at all by what happened. So that's where the disconnect for me is. It's just like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's a huge disconnect. Hypothetically speaking, though, if Reggie Bush just showed up and they let him in, what does the NCAA do? I mean, can you test that? Can you just be like...
I think USC should. That's where you have to go in and be like, look, you call them and be like, look, this is over. We're going to have them come back. You don't have to make any statement or anything, but you're just not going to say anything about it. And we're moving on. And do it. And I think you have to be able to push back a little bit. Since the sanctions hit, USC's just rolled over with everything with the NCAA. We saw Penn State fight. We saw North Carolina fight in weird ways. Miami, all these programs fought back. And I think now there's not as much teeth with the NCAA after they did that and they overreached with this Reggie Bush stuff. So I think USC needs to kind of step back up. And if they had a real strong leadership in the athletic administration, I think they would do that. They just haven't had that with the hirings they've made, just hiring former football players, keeping the same thing over and over again. They need to step up and be like, look, this is what we're doing. You make a call. Here's how this is going to work and go from there and then see what the NCAA does. No one's going to be defending the NCAA if they want to try to go after USC again. Everyone else is going to be on you. It wasn't that way before. Now it would be like, this is stupid. Why are you keeping Reggie Bush? Why are you banning him for life? He's 86 for life from USC. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. Well, moving on to the present and present topics. Ryan, you want to talk about a little bit about the article you wrote today?
Yeah, that's player development. Very popular. So this came from, I'm not looking for negative stories. I got a positive one coming tomorrow. But yes, there's been some weird stuff that's happening. But 24/7 Sports and Chris Hummer, who does a good job, one of the college football analysts there, he's based out of Austin, Texas, did a 5-year study looking at recruiting classes, I believe, from 2010 to 2015. Basically, there was a bunch of different parameters. You look at the number of top 247 players. So the top, it's mostly 4- and 5-star players. So the top like 250-ish players in the country, each program signed, and then you got points for any of those program, any of those players getting drafted in the NFL. If they went like the first, you know, early rounds, they got a couple more points than if they went like fourth round, 4 through 7. I think they divided it the way the draft is divided. You know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, whatever it is. So anyway, you got points. It was like, and then there was a development rating that he gave to everyone. Now, the top four programs in the country were Florida, Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State. And they all had a development rating of 1 point something. So it was over one. So that means that, you know, of the players they brought in, a lot of them went on and were drafted by the NFL. The Ohio State and Alabama, of those two, of those four programs, had a lot of dudes, a lot of prospects to choose from, a lot of the top 24. And then Clemson and Florida, not as much, but they put them in at a very efficient rate. At the bottom of the scale was Texas. They were like 0.18. So they had a lot of the top 247 programs, but only 10% or 10.5% of them were drafted. So of all those, you know, elite prospects that Texas signed, only about 10% of them were drafted in the NFL. So that's pretty bad.
Texas actually will not have a first-round pick for – this will be a fourth year in a row, which will be like the first time in like 40 or 50 years.
Wow.
Whereas UTSA has had a first-round pick. Baylor. Like every other – like
Texas program. Like,
yeah. Has had a first-round pick during that stint, but Texas has not.
Yeah. And USC wasn't as bad as Texas, but on the bottom of that scale too. Now, the weird thing is USC signed the second most top 247 prospects behind Alabama. So as far as elite recruiting talent coming in, USC was only second to Alabama, but they only had 33.3%. You know, a third of those guys end up being drafted by the NFL. So their development rating was 0.6. And it was kind of the same place as South Carolina, Tennessee, like teams that get a bunch of talent but don't really do as much with them. That's kind of where USC is. And I talked to Chris Hummer this morning a little bit. He said for the next couple of classes too, 2016, 17, 18, it's going to keep trending down from where, you know, projective where these guys are going to go. So it's not a very positive look. And so I kind of broke it down a little bit in the article talking about, you know, the player development that's not really happening, that the elite talent is getting there, at least according to the recruiting rankings. You know, Alabama's get the same kind of players. Ohio State's getting the same kind of players. They're developing them at a higher rate and putting them in the NFL at a higher rate. So it's not that it's something that can't be, you know, fixed, but it's not trending in the right direction. And if you look at this last recruiting class, only three of the top 24/7 players were drafted, signed by USC. So that number, usually USC's bringing in close to 10, averaging over this study, 10 of the top 247 players. This last recruiting cycle, only three. So now, I mean, your percentages can go up if like two of those guys get drafted in the NFL. It's like better, but you're not getting the same kind of numbers that we've seen traditionally. So it's what a lot of the USC fans on the message boards that don't like the coaching staff. And this isn't all on Clay Helton, because a lot of this, you know, some of this happened during Sark, you know, Kiffin and Sark, some of it during Helton. But it's not a great trend, shotgun, that USC doesn't seem to be developing these guys like some of the other top programs.
Yeah, it's the kind of the exact opposite of the Pete Carroll days. Whereas Pete Carroll, the talent would come in, the talent would go in the first round. You have several first-round draft picks. That's why USC has sparsely had first-round draft picks the last 4 or 5 years. You know, you get a Leonard Williams, you get a Sam Darnold, you get a Dory Jackson, but – you know, if Juju was developed a little bit more, does he make it in the first round? You know,
he looks like it could have been one right now. Yeah, right?
He's showing that obviously he can produce it in the NFL. And, you know, if you're winning a bunch, then sometimes guys get overvalued and they get in the first round when, you know, and then you have the discussion about who's the biggest bust. But you can't have a discussion about the biggest bust if you're not getting anybody into the first round. And that's kind of been the trend more recently. You know, there was a question on YouTube asking who was the last offensive lineman drafted in the first round. Well, that answer would be Matt Khalil, who went in the top five. But, you know, that was 5 years ago now, I believe.
More than that, right? Is it
5 or 6 years ago now? So, yeah. You know, it's been long enough that he's on his second, or I think he's on his third team that is going to be this year. So, you know, USC just has not been good in the trenches in that regard. And you thought Chuma Adoga might be a guy that could, that was talented enough to do that. But, you know, he has not developed as much as, you know, potentially his talent was coming out of high school. And, you know, the expectations were there. He can still be in the second round. I don't think he's going to work his way in the first round, obviously, in the next day.
Right.
But, you know, that's the kind of thing that you're looking at. Guys like E.J. Price, who, you know, if he comes in, he plays, and Austin Jackson, those are guys you look at and, like, those are potential first round. You know, coming out of high school, you look at the tape, you look at the guys, you go, that guy's got – he's a potential first round pick.
Yeah.
Can he get there? Is the coaching helping him get there? And that has not been the case the last few years.
Yeah. So, I don't know. There was – a lot of the USC fans on the peristyle on the message board were like happy for the article. The doom and gloomers, the sunshine pumpers, not so much. Just sort of, you know, wasn't trying to make any sort of statement on what he's doing, but it does look like from the numbers that, and this was a really interesting study that took 5 years or went, you know, a span over 5 years. USC certainly not developing it at the level of some of the programs that are having a lot more success. So it kind of makes sense.
And we got a question on YouTube from the Kila B730. He says, so who do we blame for not developing players, Clay or the assistants or both?
Well, like I said, I mean, some of the started with the other staffs too, but I think it's the coaching staff in general. It's not just the head coach. It's not just the assistants. It's, you know, the head coach is assembling the assistants. And yeah, I think, you know, it's a more of a coaching staff sort of problem. There's some arguments on the peristyle that maybe some of the prospects are overrated, but, you know, this is over 5 years, and you know, not every prospect USC gets is overrated all the time. I think there could be some of that too, but I would put a lot of it on, you know, the individual coaching staffs.
It's the entire organization. You could look at the administration and what they put in place. I mean, you look at strength and conditioning and how USC players have gone to the combine in previous years, and people have been like, well, why are they only lifting that little bit? You know, there's just a lot of factors into it. The whole organization has not helped these players.
Right.
And it all started with, you know, with Sark, basically. You know, with him, or I would say it started with him, because Lane Kiffin doesn't work out. You make a move. You decide to bring in Sark instead of potentially Chris Peterson, who they'd interviewed. And a year and a half in, he gets fired, you know, for his off-the-field issues. And then you're kind of in a tailspin. Now you got Orgeron. Now you got Helton. You're still trying to figure, you know, trying to get some stability there. And with all the turnover, it makes it that much more difficult for players. We talked a little bit about it on the Family Feud podcast about how, you know, when you're a new guy and you come in, and a guy like Dominic Davis was come in to be a slot guy, you know, him and Adoree were going to play some slot stuff and kind of a, you know, a spread offense, and you're going to spread them out and get the ball to him and let him make a move or something. Well, when Helton came in, he completely changed that. They didn't want to do that anymore. So now that guy, and you look at some of the DBs, and they've had three different coaches in their, you know, their 4 or 5 years at USC. How do you, you know, if a guy's teaching you one thing and the next guy comes in and teaches you something different, is that building on what you've already learned, or is that taken away? You have to relearn stuff. You know, there's just, when you have the consistency and everyone's performing well, and when you bring in a new coach, it's because, well, the old guy got promoted somewhere else, or, you know, we're bringing in a new guy because we really like that guy. You know, you're bringing Dylan McCullough, that type of guy. That hasn't been the case. It's okay, who can we get? Because who wants to come to USC, you know, to an extent, because you're struggling. And coaches want to go where they know that they're going to have talent, produce talent, and then be able to build on their career and go somewhere else. Yeah. And that hasn't necessarily been the case at USC.
Yeah, I think, like Shaka said, the organization in general is a great point. And when you make a bad decision in life or whatever you're doing, you can compound it after you figure out it's a bad decision, or you could fix it. USC completely just compounded their bad. The Lane Kiffin decision was bad. He was at Tennessee for a year. The only reason you hired him is because he was under Pete Carroll, blah, 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 whatever. That was bad. Well, you doubled down on that when you fired him and hired Steve Sarkisian. You basically hired the same guy. That was dumb. That was another thing. And then you go with Clay Helton, who was assistant under those guys. So you've not got away from this 2010 decision that was arguably bad from back in the day, and you've kept going down that same well. So it just doesn't make much sense. So, yeah, I think the coaching staff in general, the organization in general, but if they had made a good decision, even after, if you go with Lane and you hire someone else, you hire Chris Peterson instead after that or whatever, you're probably not even having this discussion, but you've just compounded one bad decision with making more afterwards. And here you are, an underachieving team.
And as Super OC pointed out on YouTube, culture.
Yes, 100%.
And if you hire the same person, like you just said, with Kiffin and Sarkisian, you bring in their assistants, that's all culture.
Yeah.
And that stems from Pat Hayden, Lynn Swann, even the entire university culture. Of the fact you hired Swann to be a fundraiser when maybe you need somebody that can make some decisions.
Yeah. Sometimes you need an outside voice, and USC's been keeping it all inside, and it's not been good. And we've talked about it ad nauseum. But
Ryan's rules.
My rules. Hire somebody that's whatever your job is. Hire somebody that's done that job well. So whatever you're doing, you're a ditch digger, get someone that's dug ditches really, really well. And then I add for the USC side, they can't know the fight song. So don't hire anyone that has USC ties, because you've done that so many times. I know people get mad. You went the Trojan family and the network and all that stuff. Yes, but you've abused that. So you've lost your hire a USC person privileges. Just like in Pulp Fiction, you lost your LA privileges. What they said to Bruce Willis or whatever.
Never seen the movie.
You've never seen Pulp Fiction?
I'm okay. Sorry.
You've lost your hiring from the USC family privileges. For those big jobs, just get someone that's done it before and has no ties to USC, and you will be much better off.
Agreed. Looking forward at what this offseason looks like, someone asked about PRPs. Usually they start kind of throwing unofficially in May, and then PRPs begin in June. I believe Ulau on YouTube asked, are fans going to be able to see PRPs this season, aka are we going to be able to film it and put it on the site? Do we know that yet? I don't think we do.
We don't. The last couple of years, it's become more and more restricted. They were throwing over on Howard Jones Field or Brian Kennedy Field, but that is a closed, they're saying it's a closed facility. And if we went in there, then they would have to staff it and it would become some official practice. They had this whole big explanation why we can't do what we've done for years and years. But we could stand up on top of the track field and film it from there. Parts of it, we couldn't film like the team stuff. We've talked about this on our podcast with Dan Weber and Keely and myself, where they've made these PRPs more like practices, walk-through practice. They want to run the plays. Now, so we don't know for sure how that's going to change. Usually it doesn't get better. It's usually only creeps worse. But with Graham Harrell coming in, it's not about learning every play in the playbook. It's not about you have that stack of plays. It's really about quarterbacks getting reps. What the PRPs used to be, they used to be fun, competitive. Quarterbacks throwing to guy, receivers running to grass, running to try to find an opening. And then I'm trying to be on the same page and hitting the open guy and just moving like that. I think they want to get a lot more reps as opposed to here's this big playbook and we're going to run all these things, which that's what they've been doing the last couple of years. My gut is that they don't really need to do that anymore.
Yeah.
So maybe it's going to be a little bit more open. I'm not holding my breath, but we'll see. It's usually gets a little bit more and more restrictive. Now, we get to do stuff that a lot of people that cover programs don't do, but we're creeping towards what other programs are doing, where it's becoming more and more closed off.
Yeah. I mean, as far as if it's going to be less scripted, how much does that help guys just have fun and be naturally competitive? Whereas before, you could argue that having the script over 2 months of summer and then going into fall camp and having that script again, it kind of burns out guys and makes them already sick of what they're doing before they even step into fall camp.
Yeah, they used to be a lot of fun. Like, there would be a lot of pictures of guys with their shirts off and flexing for you. And the players love it. They love when we come down there. If you got your camera, they're going to pose for you. They pose for me, whatever. Even when we were up on the track field, they would pose for us, like, walking off the field. They'd want to see that. Or if they made an interception, they'd come over, like, hey, Keely, can I see that off your camera? Like,
yeah.
So we've kind of got away from that. But it was a lot of fun. They would do the one-on-ones, and those were super competitive. They'd stay afterwards, and I remember Jenny Harris coming out and, he was a defender. He wasn't a wide receiver. They made him a wide receiver and he was making all these plays. He's like, wow, he hadn't played wide receiver since he was 7 years old. I don't know if you can it's going to be hard to do that anymore. Like, people have merged in the summer before because of the competitive nature of it. Now it's really just more about, or at least it was, more about just kind of running the plays, and it wasn't very competitive. Like, if a Jenny Harris came in today as a DB the way he was, he never would have got a chance to, you know, switch play receiver and then switch back and stuff. And so I don't think it would happen in the kind of culture that we're seeing now.
Yeah.
And Keely even mentioned earlier in our podcast that it can get monotonous when you're running the same plays over from spring to summer to fall, and you're not having the fun you want to have. And I mentioned that it's much easier for it to be monotonous when you're coming off a 2-hour workout too. You've just got done running and killing yourself, busting your tail. And suddenly you're like, okay, you run these same plays, the same ones you just ran last week over again. All right, go, you run it. Okay, throw it. Like, there's no enthusiasm for that, where it's like, okay, one-on-one competition periods. Now we're going to go at each other. And it's fun, you know, because then you got bragging rights and you can go through the rest of the day, the rest of the week, or whatever it may be. But I think that they've got to get back to having fun, you know.
Yeah.
If Coach O brought some cookies back and that's what it takes, whatever. I don't know. But, you know, I think that that's part of something that needs to be a part of the culture. There's no, when they have music in practice, guys get really excited and they start dancing and stuff. They brought that a little bit. You know, they're trying to make some changes. So we'll see if they make some changes this summer as well. They made some changes in the spring that were positive. We'll see if they continue it as it goes.
I think it would be great if it became, again, player-run practices, where Graham Harrell goes out to JT and Jack Sears and Slovis and is like, hey, go out and run the stuff we did. Like, that's what the instructions, not here's a book of what we want done and go do that stuff. Where, okay, page 7, we're going to do this. If they were just like, hey, remember what we did in spring? Go out and do that with the guys. I think that's perfect. You know, where they're going to run it on their own. And hopefully they do that. I think that would be beneficial.
And the interesting theory about that, Ryan, is that Graham Harrell said one of the most important things for the quarterbacks in the offseason is to develop leadership and see which leader is going to stand out. And so if you give them kind of free range, I think it gives them more of an opportunity to become a leader. Whereas if you're just running scripts, you don't have to lead that necessarily. You're just saying, okay, we're doing this now and go do it, you know? So yeah. I think it would be interesting if we see more player run in that sense. I know on the defensive side, Clancy Pendergast said on the last Thursday practice of spring camp, he let Jordan Iosefa and John Houston kind of run things for the first half of practice. So what he wants them to do during PRP. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But I mean, more fun would be good. My favorite times of PRPs was watching Juju and Adoree go at it just for fun. You know, that's to me, that's what PRPs are about. But let's get into questions, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's see.
We're 45 minutes in. How did that happen?
I know. It's pretty crazy. When we get calls and we have a meaty top section, it gets pretty long.
Yeah, there's some meaty stuff to talk about.
Yep. Let's see. Jasper Smith says on YouTube, as the draft is concerned, for the 2020 NFL draft, do we have any potential first rounders? Did we already discuss this?
Well, pretty much.
Yeah, we are.
Okay. Sorry. Let's see.
Michael Pittman's the potential one.
Yes. Sorry.
That's all right.
It's hard discussing things and then going straight into questions.
Yeah.
Let's see. Sorry.
Ron Major wanted to know, what do we do now? We just lift weights until August? Wouldn't be a terrible thing, Ron. That wouldn't be a terrible thing. Just lift some weights.
Someone asked, LDR asked, do we have any information about Osmus and his program so far?
It seems to be more like there seems strength to be a bigger aspect of it, just from watching some of the videos and stuff. I don't, you know. We don't know for sure yet, but yeah, it seems to be, it's going to be a different, like we talked about, like if you're changing something, you get a different gardener or whatever. It's going to be something a little different. This is going to be a little bit different with the strength program. So they'll be emphasizing different things. I think strength is going to be more of an emphasis there. So we'll see. It might affect some positions more than others.
I heard that there was more emphasis on powerlifting and across all positions. I mean, is there a need for specialization based on which players your strength and conditioning?
I mean, I think this group has to get stronger just as a whole.
Yeah.
Start with that and then you work on the other stuff.
Yeah. And it's weird because, you know, everybody responds differently. And I think a lot of the benefits of having, you know, great strength programs is that there's going to be customized plans. But I've heard the same thing where it's going to be more powerlifting. Does like Jack Sears need to do more of that? You know, probably not, but there's different aspects of it. But I think in general, like Shotgun said, they probably needed a little bit more of that in the rotation, and it wasn't there. So now you're gonna get more of that, and it's probably gonna help in some aspects, and maybe some others. A workout was working better for them in the old way than the new one. But everyone responds, you know, differently. You're gonna do things differently. Everyone, you know, we could all work out different things, different ways, and so hopefully it's customized. You want it to be customized for everybody.
The couple of linemen I've talked to that were with Osmus before rave about him. Yeah. So I think that tells you that's an area where USC needs to get stronger, and I think that tells you that they can get stronger there.
Yeah.
YouTube, step up your question game. I'm just going to put you guys on
the spot.
Come on,
YouTube. Yeah, Periscope too.
Facebook has some questions, and we'll get to those in a second. We had a question specifically for you, Shotgun, from Ulao Ulao. He says, quick question, what DB has really impressed you to this point? ITS looks like a special talent but needs to learn footwork.
I think Britton Allen's ability to play corner and safety is impressive. You know, for a freshman coming in his first spring, I think that is impressive. Talanoa Hufanga wasn't out there for very long, but he's a playmaker.
Yeah.
Once he gets healthy, he's going to be a playmaker.
I would agree.
He's special talent. And he could probably take our jobs when he's done playing football because he's good at that stuff.
Talanoa Hufanga?
Yeah, yeah.
He's
communications.
A good
he's a good talker. And
he's very media friendly too, which always helps.
Yes.
Ryan, but who would you say? I know it was for Shotgun, but I'm going to
give it to you. No, I would go with Hufanga. I just have a feeling that Elijah Griffin's going to be is going to have a big year. I think I think he's a really talented kid. I think now you got a lot of those veterans gone. I think he's going to step up, and you're going to see a lot more from him.
We have a question along the same lines of DB. Stephen Conroy on Facebook says, with so many freshman DBs coming in and probably getting playing time this fall, any suggestions on how to incorporate them during the summer?
You get them in there and you get to work on, you know, how you can work on technique as much as you can, but you also get to work on calls. That's the biggest thing. Learning the communication, that's the hardest part for freshmen when they come in. A lot of new calls, you know, and they're going to have to figure out how to communicate with the safeties as well as the linebackers. You know, so I think that's the biggest thing for the new guys when they come in, for the cornerbacks at least, is getting the communication from the outside, and then you just go play. You know, Adonis OT and Kalana Makala and those guys, just go play and see what you can do, and then you go from there once you get to the fall. But the biggest thing is the communication. That's what you can work on most, because the coaches can't come work on your technique during the spring workout. So you got to get down the communications as much as you can.
And I would like to see, I think certainly that's important, but when we talk about doing one-on-ones and stuff, you got a whole bunch of new DBs coming in. Let them come out and start guarding these receivers and just these throwing lines and see what they can do. And one of them stands out and picks a couple balls off and stuff, and you're like, oh, they'll get some buzz. And I think you'll start to see some guys separate. And not that, you know, if you don't perform well in the summer, it's not that you can't do that later, but, you know, it might be some that this guy's ready to make the transition from high school to college. With all those new DBs in there, I'd love to just see him out there trying to cover Michael Pittman and Tyler Vaughns and Devin Williams and Amon-Ra St. Brown and all those guys and see how they do. Because we've seen some guys emerge in the summer like, that guy's going to be a player. So yeah. I would love to see a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from Angel on YouTube. He says, if you guys could add 5 players from this year's draft to the 2019 team, which 5 would have the biggest impact?
From any program?
Yeah. All first five.
Kyler Murray.
Yeah, it's like Kyler Murray is freaking
Quinnen
awesome.
Williams. Just give me the first 5
Bosa,
picks.
You know, Nick Bosa? Nick Bosa, yeah.
Give me Quinnen Williams in the middle. I'll take one of the edge rushers. I don't care which one.
The offensive tackle from Washington State. Like he's
Andre
probably
Dillard.
Gonna,
yeah,
you need
he'd be good
a
in
corner,
the
maybe?
Air raid offense. Yeah, I would probably take a couple of DBs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you need an offensive lineman, though.
Yeah, you do. That's
I'll take
one.
Andre Dillard, but I'm taking Kyler Murray, no doubt. Because you know what he can do. So there's 2 of my picks. I'm taking probably at least one DB. I'll take DeAndre Baker and maybe Byron Murphy, former USC target.
Yeah, from Washington.
So that's 4, and then I'll take an edge rusher. Give me the edge rusher.
Bosa or something.
I don't know. Quinnen Williams in the middle of the – nah, USC's got good enough tackles. Give me an edge rusher. I'll take a kid from Kentucky, Josh Allen, I think it is.
Okay, yeah, he's a stud.
My
yeah, all those –
good stuff.
They would all help.
True. We have similar questions from Killer B and Ulao Lao. Killer says, who is the strongest person on the team right now? And Ulao says, is anyone on the team a workout warrior?
Now that Porter's gone, who's the workout studs?
I would say maybe Connor Murphy.
He works out a lot.
He was part of the discipleship of Porter and his family. His brother is a workout person? His sister, dad.
His sister's dad. A workout, like, fitness model or something.
But his dad was like a
fitness Mr. model. Olympic.
Yeah, yes, I think so. Yeah. But yeah, his sister, I think, went to Arizona State, and she's like 6'2", like some kind of fitness model or something.
I mean, he has this brother, too, that's in the NFL.
True. That's true. That and Connor has this really amazing mullet going right now. Always, so that's strength right there. So I like that call.
But then who's the strongest? Is that the same thing in your mind?
I don't know. Who would you
I
say?
Mean, you look in the middle of the defense.
Those it's like Gentifelli maybe. Yeah. Or Peely maybe.
I don't know who's the strongest of those guys.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, I'll try to arm wrestle them all and tell you how it goes.
That sounds interesting. Oh, yeah. Speaking, should we tease this already? Next week, we're going to have the new drum major on the show. How exciting is that?
I was going to keep it a secret.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. No, I'm excited. I want to tease it.
No, Indy Anderson. So if you didn't see on social media, it's pretty cool. So USC is going to have their first female drum major. So reached out to her today. She's going to come on the show. She'll be in studio next week. So get your questions ready for that. I think it's a cool deal. It's not Tommy Trojan. They said today on social media, don't call her Tammy Trojan or Helena Troy. She's a USC drum major. So the last guy did it for a couple years. They usually like grad students, or are they like, I don't know. We'll talk to India about it. But pretty cool. You see the picture of her. I mean, you know, none of us would want to fight her. She's
fierce.
She's tough. And she's got a sword in her hand.
When she got named, she immediately was like, I'm ready.
She grabbed the sword and like did the thing. I was like, whoa. She was like, practice this.
She's ready. She's fierce.
She's, yeah.
So she'll be on the show next
She was
week.
A tuba player, right? So she was in the tuba group.
Shouts and then to went the tubas. To,
yeah.
Yeah. I actually know a former drum major, which is weird.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's still there. We have a Twitter question from
Twitter.
EasyRider68. Hold on. We'll pull it up. He says, what did you guys think about the special teams play during the spring? Do you think it will be a repeat of last year?
I think with Ben Griffiths
it can't be a repeat.
That can't be a repeat.
There can always be a repeat. You can get injured and then back to punting 22-yard punts early in the season.
But it's hard to tell, like, team-wise. What we didn't see a ton. But at least on the punting side, you've gone from, like, you know, should be adequate to usually was below average to now could be special.
I think that way above average. That he can change the game. He can flip the field a little bit more. He also can punt in different directions. He's used to kicking on the run. So that's not something you can do just different things with him. So he gives you options. He's a big dude, too. I don't know how much they want to try to, you know, run any fakes or stuff with him, but he could potentially run some fakes as well. He's in that Kyle Negreti style, you know, where he'll go and hit somebody if need be. So
I do want to see him tackle somebody.
I think the biggest question is getting Chase McGrath back and then having him battle with Michael Brown. I think that's a bigger question mark coming out of the spring. You don't really know about the returners yet. You just kind of assume it's going to be the same guys because, you know, with the exception of Valus Jones, you know, if he's not back, then you plug in somebody, but I think it'll be the same guys otherwise. I don't know that anyone's basically showed out. You know, if you remember back when Adoree or even Jack Jones, when they first would make a couple returns, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But no one really caught my eye like that this spring.
No.
We'll see in the fall when it's more of a competition and they're trying to decide those positions and stuff, but I'm not sure.
I want to see, so like some guys making a nice return off of, you know, he outkicks his coverage. Some dude's making an amazing return and like, the second to last guy, he has to make a cut, and he basically is cutting like right towards Ben Griffiths. And so normally if it's just a punter, like you could make that quick move right away and beat him, but then he just gets plowed. Like he's like just gets destroyed by this former Aussie football player. So I think that would be fun to see.
There was that one game where Reed Butteridge totally took out someone. I forgot what game it was, but it was at the Coliseum. I remember that. So it's not – it has been done before, Ryan.
Right, but when it's going to be someone like this, like when – if you remember different. David Beeler, who was the kicker, who used to be a USC fullback, he ended up getting a draft or signing with the Dallas Cowboys. He kicked like a 49-yard field goal against Cal, I think, with a neck roll on. So he was like their long field goal kicker, but also playing like fullback and stuff. So badass kickers are pretty cool. And they loved him I remember he went to the NFL combine and usually he was on the day like kickers, I think it was like tight ends and then like special teams players. When he did the bench press, like people were leaving because like the tight ends were done, but you don't usually watch it. No one cares about the kickers bench pressing and stuff, but he drew a crowd and became like, you know, like an early sort of viral video, like whatever. He put up like 28 reps or something on the bench press for a kicker. So that stuff's cool. So I love when kickers are like real football players. Not that they're not all not, but like these are guys are like real, real football players.
Punters are people too, right?
Yes. Punters that played 7 years of Australian rules football are definitely people.
Wow. We have a Facebook question from Steven. He says, has there been any clarity on whether Clancy Pendergast is going with a 4-3-5-2 or 3-4 defense this year?
All of the above?
Yeah.
He'll use all of them. You know, they're showing more four down fronts in early down situations, and then they'll break out their pass rush unit for third downs and stuff. So I think it's going to be more based on down and distance this year, even more than it has been in the last couple of years.
Yeah. I think when you see Connor Murphy in, it's going to look more like a 4-2-5 kind of thing. But, oh, there's Hunter Echols in there. Now it's going to look more like a, you know, a 3-4 kind of thing. So it's just, you know, it's going to depend on the personnel. How much they rotate, I mean, that's we're curious to see. I think they could. There's a potential to rotate a lot, especially with the depth you're going to have in the front seven. But we haven't seen a lot of that, you know, traditionally. They talk about doing it, but I don't know if it's going to happen.
Yep. We have a question from Ryan Young on YouTube who says, which early enrollee besides Drake Jackson will most likely make an impact?
Ben Griffith.
Yeah, that's the first one that came to my mind.
Yeah.
Who else?
I was going to say Drake London, but he's not early enrollee.
Could be Britton Allen, potentially.
John Jackson III, I think, has an opportunity to get in those roles, you know, especially if they go more 4 and 5 wide, just because of the numbers at receiver and the fact that he'll have a little leg up. So we'll see in the fall how he fits in when you get Muneer McClain in there, you get Drake London in there, you get those guys. So, but he's another name that comes to mind. You know, a lot of the other guys are in positions of strength.
Yeah,
we'll let Raylan go forth, and even to an extent, Britton Allen, because he's at safety behind Isaiah Polamau and Talanoa Hufanga, and there's already a nickel with Chase Williams. So, you know, some of those guys are just in positions of strength already, and Keaton Slovis, the same thing. He's going to be the backup as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I would go with that. We have a Facebook question from Andrew who says, with our new offense, we have potential to put 35 points up a game that may cause teams to throw a lot. Do you have confidence in our defensive line to get to the quarterback?
More confidence in the defensive line to get there this year than last year after Porter Gustin's injury. Just because I think Brandon Peely's taking his game to another level. I think Jacob Lichtenstein is going to take a step forward. And I think those young edge guys are going to have an opportunity and are going to have, you know, going to make some more plays with Hunter Echols, Abdul Malik McClain, Elijah Winston, those guys coming off the edge. I think they're going to make more of an impact. And then Drake Jackson, because you're basically just, it's basically Malik Dorton and Porter Gustin for Drake Jackson and a year of development from those guys.
Yeah.
And I think you would take that, the younger guys and the year of development for everybody. Jay Tefele is going to be in the backfield more than he was last year. So I think you would trust that they would get a little bit more pressure than last year.
Yeah. I think Christian Rector is going to have a big year.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
We are reaching the top of the hour, so let's get into some rapid fire because we do have a lot of questions. People did.
And if you want to get a late call in,
we
had some of the early calls. And
still
then,
screening calls.
Poor Mike is over there sitting in the room just waiting for you to call. So
Intense.
We had that one, it was a couple weeks ago when we had like three people on hold.
Yeah, we had a blitz. We had like seven in the beginning of the show 2 weeks ago. It was crazy.
We can have three. We set it up that there's three at a time we could have. So that's usually it's not going to go over that.
But. Yeah. Just a friendly reminder, Ryan, you haven't had a food analogy yet.
No food analogy. Okay.
I mean, I don't want
to. You would have made it to the end of the show.
I don't want to force it. Someone already requested it from you, Ryan. I'm just trying to see if it would naturally
come. We need some good questions, people.
Shots fired, you guys. Killer B has a question for you, Ryan. He says, any new thoughts on the quarterback competition?
New thoughts. It's sort of like when you make your spaghetti. No. I still think JT Daniels is going to be the guy. You know, Matt Fink essentially bowing out at this point. You know, I guess it makes sense for him. We didn't really think he was going to do that. We felt he was maybe a little bit higher up. I know there's a lot of people that are in the Jack Sears camp. But I feel like it's still JT Daniels to lose. I don't think it's over yet by any stretch. But I think this new system brought guys closer together. You see a guy like Slovis coming in and see him performing well. I think that's a factor, shows you how an effective offensive system can have a positive impact on all the quarterbacks. I think it really has on all those guys. If I had to bet, I would still say it's a JT Daniels to win, but you know, we'll see. And it'll be curious to what we can watch this summer, see how those guys look. But you know, the fact that Slovis did as well as he did, I think just shows you this is a much more friendly quarterback system and one that's kind of putting the players in a position to succeed, where I don't really think the system we saw the last couple of years was that at all. It was sort of like, hey, have the players bail you out.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. We have a Facebook question from John. He says, Porter Gustin using Adderall, it's an attention deficit drug that's being abused widely. Are our football players using it? It's not something that should be toyed with. Is anyone monitoring this?
It's very common on college campuses, right? Like,
yes,
people,
it is.
For what, you know, you could use it if you want to, what I've read, if you want to lose weight. It's not necessarily a great, I mean, people would, like, there was one former football player who, after he left the league, he started taking it, and I forget what the analogy he used, but you're like more awake, you're more aware of what's going on, and you're more intense. So I don't think it's really more for working out. It could be more for playing in a game, yeah, things like that. But it's used commonly by college students to stay up late and study and be more aware for their tests and things like that. So, I mean, it's a college problem, not just a college football or sports problem, I would think.
Yeah.
It's been an issue in the NFL. You know, a lot of players have used it and then got put on a performance enhancing level because, you know, it keeps you super focused during the game, you know, because if you're in a game, you're going to be, you know, you're going to be locked into what you're doing and you can be super focused at what you're doing. You know, you're going to play that much better. So I think that it's something the NFL is trying to figure out, and like, it's the potential that it may not even be a PED any longer on the next collective bargaining agreement. That's something that the players have pushed for, I believe, you know, just to try to get it downgraded to not being on that level. So because, I mean, in 2013, I think it was, or 2014, Richard Sherman estimated that like 50% of the league was on it.
Wow.
I think is what it was. I'd have to look that up in a minute. But, you know, so a lot of the players were using it. So I don't necessarily think that it's in the PED category that you think. When you think PEDs, you think steroids. Everyone thinks steroids.
Right.
But performance enhancing, you know, something that makes you a more focused player on game days, that is performance enhancing as well.
Yeah. I think there's some dangers too when you use it working out because of what it can do to your heart rate and stuff. So there's, I mean, I'm no drug expert and stuff, but it's, yeah, we'll see. Hopefully, you know, for Porter Gustin's sake, hopefully it was just that he asked to use that or whatever. He was coming back off of the injury, and there's nothing else that he was using there too. I mean, if there was, then, you know, you're going to probably see him drop in the draft if there was something he was using that wasn't announced that he wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah. We have a Twitter question from Steve. He says, anecdotal or otherwise, have you noticed a decrease in renewals from donors? My tailgate is going to be about half the size for 2019.
We hear a lot of that, unfortunately. You know, we're not getting sort of official numbers from USC. I think we've talked about this in the war room, but we've got a lot of calls, texts. I mean, it started last year when, you know, everyone had to change their seats essentially twice. You know, you went from 2017 to wherever you're sitting, 2018, they took out all those seats. So you had to move then, and then people moved again. They sent out a lot of renewal notices. You had to pay higher fees and renovation, all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, there was a lot of people complaining, but there's some people were taking advantage of it, where basically there was more open seats. Like if you were waiting for better seats, some of those people with better seats got mad and left. A lot of them were, they've had the same seats for, we've heard so many times, our families had these seats for 40 years. The people that would sit next to us, they were in our wedding because we sat next to them at football games all the time. And then basically that all changed. Like you were moving and you weren't sitting next to your neighbors. And that was a big part. And I think USC probably underestimated how important that was for a lot of the fans. But it was a big part of it. But so some of those people didn't renew, but it opened up better seats for some other people that were like, hey, I'm going no matter what. This is a tradition. So you got to move your seats, but they actually ended up improving their seats because people left. But I think it's as a result of more people not renewing their seats, and then some people kind of using that to take advantage. So we don't know the numbers. We'll see when the season rolls around, but I don't think it's going to be positive. And I wrote a story about this last year about the being like the perfect storm, because parking stunk last year, tailgating like went away, everyone moved their seats, you know, higher prices, all that stuff. Then the team goes 5-7, And that's, you know, that's about as bad as it gets. So I think it's not going to be positive. If they come out and start winning games, though, I think you'll see people coming back. But it's a, you know, reduced stadium, 77,000 seats. The first game, Fresno State might bring 20,000 people. So, but we'll see how many USC fans end up going there and if they give us any kind of numbers as far as season ticket renewals go.
Good stuff. Shotgun, Tester Troy has a Facebook or a YouTube question for you. He says, have you noticed any dogs fighting for that starting spot on the offensive line?
I believe that was Yulau.
Same thing.
Same thing?
Oh, yes.
Okay. No, it's the same five guys. I mean, I think Brett Nealon has taken a step forward and basically entrenched himself at the center spot. But I think it's going to be – and Elijah Vera Tucker will be in there. Jalen McKenzie will be in there. They'll be the three new guys that you have, but there's not a lot of competition right now. So I don't think you necessarily have to be a dog at this point to be in the top five.
No.
You can be a pup. Just kidding. JFeezy8 on YouTube says, guys, why does some fans and analysts anoint Jack Sears as the next Michael Vick? I know he had a decent game against ASU, but come on.
He ain't no Michael Vick. I'll tell you that.
No.
Because no one's Michael Vick. No one's running a 4. I think you're running a 4-2 something at the combine.
Yeah, something ridiculous.
It's the best time ever by a quarterback. That's not going to happen.
I don't get it. I think it's mostly people that think that JT Daniels stinks. And sometimes when you get something stuffed down your throat, let's say... all your friends tell you about this amazing tortellini that you need to eat from our friends over at Trader Joe's, and you can sit too much of it. You know, Game of Thrones, like people like just stuffing down your throat, and you're like tired of it. JT Daniels comes in, and he was anointed the second coming. He graduated early. Everyone talked about that's all you couldn't say JT Daniels without he should still be in high school and blah, 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 blah. And some people are tired of it. And then the offense stunk. So they're going to say, you shoved this guy down my throat. You made me eat this tortellini. You made me watch a stupid Game of Thrones. And then I didn't like it. And it stunk. So now I'm totally against that. Even though you might be going forward, like the last season of Game of Thrones is coming out. Or we're having this big pasta dinner over our house and the tortellini is going to be featured. But I'm tired of it. I don't want that stuff anymore. Is this bad? I'm just trying to work in the food thing. And so they're over it. Now, I'm not blaming JT Daniels for the offense stinking last year, but some people were tired of hearing about him, and so they're going to blame him for the offense. If Jack Sears started all the games last year, the offense still would have stunk. It was the offense that stunk, not the quarterback. So I don't buy that. So Game of Thrones, maybe you're watching it on your phone instead of like on a big TV, or the tortellini was like expired and you weren't. It wasn't the fault of the tortellini to Game of Thrones. That's why, I think that's why a lot of people hate it. The offense stunk. And they were really tired of hearing about the guy.
To be rapid fire, that was a very convoluted
I'm
answer.
Sorry. I tried to work
you
in
should
your
not
food.
Be talking, Shaka.
I tried
you
to work
the
in the food
offender.
Analogy.
You know, Ryan, it just when it's natural, just it's so much better, you know?
Yeah.
Don't force the food analogy, you know?
Well, it's natural food.
But maybe Game of Thrones was more real, where it's like, are you
I've
tired?
I've never seen a minute of Game of
Thrones. I've never either, and people, you know, but there's people that are sick of hearing it. You see it on social media. I think people were sick of JT Daniels. So once the offense didn't work, it was easy to say it's his fault.
Ryan makes me work too much, so I haven't seen it either.
Oh.
Wow.
I don't have HBO, so you guys.
My roommate does.
Yeah.
All right, ready for rapid fire? Actual rapid fire?
Oh, you like want
to? Do you agree or no?
Hold on 1 second. I have a Facebook question loaded up.
Do you
up.
Agree with that or no? Do you think?
I don't even know the answer to your question. Because
what's the question?
Why does everyone like Jack Sears? Like, what? Not everyone. No. There's a lot of people just.
If you didn't
Jack
have all the analogies, yes, I would agree with it. Part, okay. That's part of it. That there was a, you know, people felt there was an overbearance of it. Is that the right word? Yeah.
I don't know about that word, but.
Yeah. I feel like people also put too much stock in the ASU game.
They put a lot of stock in that.
Way
game.
Too much stock in it. And so I don't know. I think it's a shallow analysis of the quarterbacks if you're just like, Jack Sears, yes.
And the whole being athletic thing, like if you watched, I said this on the podcast the other day, if you watch spring practice, if you watch every spring practice, you would not come away going, wow, mobility for a quarterback is important. Like it didn't matter at all. Like,
and Graham Harrell said as much. He was asked multiple times and he said it's not a determining
factor.
It's
like nice to have. It's like if you're this beautiful kitchen and you have a wok. A wok is like a nice to have thing. It's not necessary. You want saucepans and you want, you know, all that kind of stuff. utensils. You don't need a walk. It would be nice to have. In this offense, it's nice to have a quarterback that can run, but not necessarily necessary. But some people think it's necessary, but it's not. You don't need a walk. It's nice to have a walk.
Sometimes it takes up too much space.
Yeah.
Oh. And you have to use a scholarship.
Yeah.
When you have a bunch of things that you don't necessarily need.
That was a more natural food analogy.
Great job. Sort of food organic analogy. And organic.
Facebook question. Here we go.
Go for it. Oh, yes. Thank you. Paul on Facebook says, how close is Solomon Tuialapupu to coming back? Would love to see him and EA in the middle together. Shotgun, go for it.
Yeah, we'd like to see him on the field for 2 weeks in a row. Two practices in a row.
Yeah. We put in the war room that we thought the foot thing wasn't over. And he came out and practiced and played well the first couple times, and then he was gone the rest of the time. So our intel on that was correct. Boy, I don't know when he's going to come back. It's a little disturbing that you thought he was going to be back and he really wasn't.
He was going to be back last summer. When we talked to him for signing day after he committed to USC and signed with the Trojans in February, he said he expected to be ready in summer for the workouts. That never happened. Then it was fall. Okay, we see him in fall. He doesn't do anything. Okay, now spring is not gonna happen. Now it's just a continuing thing until we see him for 2 weeks straight. It's a question that we can't answer.
Yep. I like your picture, Paul. He's got the American flag in the background, a goatee going. Nice job.
It looks very fratty, to be honest, Paul. I'm sorry.
Fratty.
It does.
It kind of looks like he's coming back from a war or something. I don't know. I think it's badass. No?
Let us know, Paul, about the story. Shotgun, go for it.
HR Picking Stuff wants us to know that Coach Harvey Hyde has won more games than Ryan Keeley and Shotgun combined. I'll trust his eyes.
That's true. Coach Harvey Hyde picked Jack Sears.
The caveat is, though, not to put Coach Hyde on blast, he did only show up for Saturday scrimmages and not the whole camp.
He did.
So, and sometimes Jack Sears looked better than he did on those days.
But yeah, Harvey Hyde won a lot of games. He's done, he'll forget more about coaching than all of us will ever know. But,
true. Very true.
We all have our opinions. We go watch practice and we tell you what we think.
True. And my name doesn't have it's K-E-L-Y-H-R, so just get it right. I'm just kidding. Go for it, Shotgun.
Jasper, assuming we have no first rounders this year in the draft, which is likely the case, which player in this year's draft class will be a steal for a team that picks him in the later rounds?
I'm kind of thinking Iman Marshall is going to do well. I think he's going to be one of those five-star guys that actually performs well. So maybe he's like a fifth or sixth round pick, but makes a team like a Nickell Robey and then just has a good career. That's just a gut feeling. You guys think?
I was kind of thinking Marvell Tell too. Yeah. So he's just a super freak athlete. So if he puts it all together at the next level, he's got it.
Yeah. And I'm very curious about the fact that the NFL scouts are swapping both of them. Some of them see
potentially.
There's some of them see Biggie Moore as a safety and Marvell Moore as a corner. So I'm like, what are they seeing that necessarily USC's coaches didn't necessarily see? So curious about that.
Jeffrey also asked, do you think Toa will get drafted?
No.
While preparing for the draft, is Porter still in school? Scourge77 asks. Usually when players announce their intention to go to the draft or they graduate and they are preparing for the draft, they are not still in school. Every once in a while, a guy has like one class left and he'll do it. But usually they want to focus all their attention, all their energy on training and getting ready for the draft, the combine, the pro day, all that stuff. So it's not normally the thing. Same thing with basketball players. Like Kevin Porter Jr. is already out of school. He's not at USC anymore.
Yeah. And with Porter, he's working it. Like, he focused on that all the time anyway, but I think he's 100% doing that now, especially coming back from the injury.
Killer B, do you think the new offense is going to give some players an opportunity to be All-Americans? Andre Dillard was a third-team All-American. So it can help, it can hurt at the same time because you don't block for as long as far as offensive linemen. So it's harder to, kind of get that notoriety. Oh, that guy holds up against this defender or whatever. But the skill players, that's where you have an opportunity to put up big numbers. And if you have some highlight plays, then you can, work your way up. I mean, guys like, Baker Mayfield or, Hollywood Brown in that offense at Oklahoma, those guys have put up really big numbers and been All-Americans.
Yeah.
I'm interrupting this for an update. So I looked at Paul's picture more in depth, and I was totally wrong. I'm sorry. He says 20 years ago, underway on a submarine off the coast of South Korea. So Ryan was exactly right.
Pow.
Sorry, Paul, about that. I retract my statement.
Something else from 20 years ago. Jesse asked, did R.J. Soward ever play in the league? Because Keeley didn't know who R.J. Soward was, really.
Oh.
And they were kind of debating that in the comments.
No, sorry, guys.
Yes, he did play. He played 13 games with the Jaguars. He made two starts. He made 14 catches out of 34 targets. 14 catches out of 34 targets. That's not a very good catch percentage. 154 yards and one touchdown. That's also possibly that the Jaguars were that bad. I think it was the Jaguars. Were that bad when he was there. So, you know, the quarterback may not have been accurate.
So he had a cup of coffee in the NFL.
Yeah, that was it. Dennis Campbell, who's the next coach? Clay Helton.
Clay Helton will be the coach tomorrow and in August and September. And that's all I'm going to say.
Question, are we in the hunt for some big-time O-line prospects in the 2020 cycle? I think it starts with the Triple M's. Jonah Monheim, Miles Murrow, and Drake Metcalf. Those are the three biggest targets for USC. Also, guys like Jeffrey Percy, who's a little bit of a project. Andrew Gentry is a Colorado offensive lineman. 6'8", Tosh Baker from Arizona. He's got the length and the size they're looking for. So there's some names for you there.
Yeah.
Dagon, don't hire within the Trojan family because you lost hiring privileges? Let's see that intonation for
that's
the question.
For me.
Yeah. No, if the person is qualified, why would you hire them? You are losing credibility to stupid statements like that.
Nice. Ooh. Here's the problem. You've based all of your hiring for important positions solely on knowledge that they are USC people. Like, the only reason Lynn Swann was hired is because he played football at USC. The only reason Pat Hayden was hired. Would anyone else have hired Lynn Swann to be their athletic director?
No.
Anyone? No. Like a Division II school? No. Pat Hayden? No. They want to hire someone that's been an athletic director before. Would anyone have hired – who was going to hire Steve Sarkisian after the Washington job? He was almost getting fired there. USC, a better program than Washington, goes out and hires him. Takes Lane Kiffin away after 1 year at Tennessee. Like, there's – the reasons they hired these people is because of their – they were familiar with them. They were from Pete Carroll or whatever. Clay Helton. Was any major college program going to hire Clay Helton as the head coach? No, USC did because he was already there. The problem is USC – only looked at the fact that they knew them, the being familiar with them. That's it. So that's why you lose the privileges. Stop doing it. If you're focusing on that, only hire based on the experience that they have and they're qualified. You said qualified candidates. All those people I mentioned were not qualified candidates. That's why you got away from it. You've lost your you lost your privileges. If you have a kid, you want another food analogy, and you say, hey, son, you can have two cookies. And then he goes and he eats 10 cookies. And then you do it again. You're like, son, make sure you only eat two cookies this time. He eats 15 cookies. You lose your cookie privileges. USC's lost their cookie privileges. I'm going to give you the two cookies from now on. You don't get to do whatever you want. So who was that?
Dagon.
Dagon, bam. That's what you got.
Interrupting for a Facebook question. Will says, how do we expect to see the tight ends used in this offense? It used to be an elite group. Last year, it seemed to be a distant afterthought.
Last year, it was a terrible group. It was the worst rated group of any players on the team. Where three of the bottom four were tight ends. The question is if they find anyone they think is a mismatch. If they have a mismatch, they will use it. You'll split him out. You'll have him inside. You'll do some different things. Jason Morrow from Texas Tech. I've used that example several times. Cliff Kingsbury's first year at Texas Tech. He won the Mackey Award given to the best tight end in the nation. Because he was a mismatch, and they threw the ball to him all the time. He had over 100 catches. If USC had a guy like Daniel Amortabebe that was healthy, he's a mismatch. And you can get one-on-one matchups in this offense, and he's a guy that you would throw the ball to a lot. The other guys that are on the roster have to prove themselves that they can be that mismatch, and they can catch the ball, Josh Follow. Because he's the guy that's supposed to be the receiver tight end, and he has not consistently caught the ball. So he's got to catch the ball better. And if he does that, you know, maybe they'll use them more often. The guys that are coming in with Jude Wolf and Ethan Ray, those guys are pretty dynamic. We'll see if they get opportunities as well.
Yeah. I wouldn't look at it as, you got to have this many tight ends, you got to have this many running backs and this many wide receivers. I think Graham Harrell's looking at it as like, we want to get the best players out there. So if three tight ends emerge as amazing players, they're going to be in the mix. If it's only Josh Follow, and then he'll be in the mix. But it's going to be get the best players out there. And like Shotgun said, put them in mismatch situations. But they'll use a bunch of tight ends. If they have a bunch of talented tight ends that can catch a football, they're not putting their hand on the ground and doing a lot of road grade blocking or anything in this offense. But if they can go out there and catch the football, they're going to be in the mix. But if the top pass catchers are all eight of them are wide receivers, then you're not going to see as much from the tight ends.
People enjoyed the return of a Ryan rant, by the way.
Thanks.
LDR.
Hashtag Ryan Rat.
LDR, do you think Keenan Kristan will return kicks once he's on campus along with ITS? ITS hasn't necessarily been the guy that's returning kicks.
No.
I think that Keenan Kristan has a chance to be in that mix, though.
He put up some, he put up some big track numbers recently, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
David, hey, Keeley, how come we have such a horrible fan base? How can we base Helton's success off of one bad season?
Because it's more than one bad season. I think if you looked at each of the three seasons, there were things where USC was not reaching their full potential. Like the whole thing about how Helton comes out after 5-7 season and says, if we just had a couple more points, we would have won those games, and that's a winning season. It was more than that. It was players not reaching their potential. It's keeping coaches on longer than they should have been on. It's things like that where you question his decision making. And granted, he's a first time, full time head coach. So he's going to make those decisions. And I think that's goes to the broader reason of why you don't bring in a first-time head coach for a job like USC, because you don't have those mistakes. So it's much more than a losing season. But to his credit, he has made important changes in spring. But, you know, fans are going to be fans, and they can react how they want to react.
Killer B, is Rick's reclassifying? Right now, it doesn't really look like it really matters for USC, because he would still go to LSU even if he did. Right now.
Huh, HR,
will JT learn how to reach a first if they have space? That's the other thing. Will JT learn how to reach a first down marker before he slides this year? That's a great question. We'll see. Yeah. We haven't seen him over on Dado learning how to slide necessarily.
No.
And learning what the right distance is to
slide.
Like
we said, that wasn't a focus this spring, but maybe will be in the fall.
Never know. Skyler, any thoughts on the Pac-12 network? At this rate, it should be free. Well, that's about how many people are watching it. So.
It's bad. And if you look at John Willer, did some great reporting on the revenue stuff. It's you know, worse than you even thought. It's not going to change until either Larry Scott's gone or that, you know, when the new deal gets done. But that's going to be 5 years from now. So I would love to see some sort of a la carte. We talked, David Woods and I talked about it on the Pac-12 podcast this week, where, you know, would you pay like 10 or 15 bucks if you could get the Pac-12 network by itself? Like, we would probably pay that. You could get it on the app and it'd be cool. But right now you can't do any of that. So it's pretty bad.
Unpopular opinion. I like the Pac-12 network.
There's some good program.
Because I get to watch baseball from a lot of different areas. If there's Thursday, Friday games, or I get to watch replays of games, I like all those factors of it. I like the fact that I can watch the 60-minute version of a USC game. So I can tape on that and then watch every play. You know, there's some things they do really well, but it's just the distribution.
Like not showing the number...
distribution is the biggest issue, is the number one issue. The second issue is picking and choosing the right content to show at the right times. UCLA is number one in baseball. A couple weeks back, about a month ago, they played at Stanford, who was number two in baseball in the country. Those games were not on Pac-12 Network.
They showed like Washington State and Utah or something, right? Yeah. Like it was like awful teams. But they don't get it. They don't do it right. That's a long story, but yes, they do a horrible job. You want to look at bad management, you look at the USC Athletic Department and look at the Pac-12 Network, and it's
just Pac-12
like
overall, not networks.
Yeah.
Because Larry Scott's, we're a media company.
Yeah.
Larry Scott's terrible. Killer B, what's the latest on Kyle Ford's knee? Is he going to be ready for PRPs? I do not think he'll be ready for PRPs. Look for him potentially in fall. That's when best chance to be back on the field and doing a bunch of stuff. You don't really want him to go through PRPs and bang knees with somebody or something to have a bad thing. David, hey guys, is a 10-win season a good season? For some, it's horrible. Why is that?
No, it would be good this year.
Yeah.
This year?
If you double your wins, it's good.
Yes, that's what I was going to say, the same thing. If you double your win total, it's good. In every year, it's not, because USC is a school that wins championships. So
yeah,
that won't get you a championship. Keeley, have you noticed if any starting O linemen are on the punt team or the kick return team?
Ooh.
I don't think they do that. I mean, I don't think they're doing on the punt protection, at least from what I saw. I don't think there's offensive linemen there anymore.
Questioning my memory of special teams, which is
there's still some offensive linemen there.
Is there still some?
Elijah Vera Tucker, yeah. And I feel like Austin Jackson is back there too, right? Yeah. So
see that when you're trying to cover a punt, those are guys that don't tackle people. It just doesn't.
But they're
make
the guys
sense.
That are the protectors for them.
Yeah.
The bodies.
I thought they could. Backed off of that a little bit. Maybe not all the way. Okay.
Sometimes they use Brandon Peely back there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Jumping in with a Facebook question, though. Jeffrey says, how can you pick any starting QB after 15 spring practices? Don't you have to wait and see how fall camp pans out before you can even think about picking who will start?
Well, you can pick them whenever you want.
Yeah.
That's up to you. That's decision making.
You can watch one throw if you want and pick if you want.
The coaches have not picked anyone.
No.
Technically. They've given a depth chart and shown where players would be if a game was to be played right now.
Yeah.
But You know, they said they were not releasing or not announcing a starting quarterback at any time until late in the fall camp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jeff, this show would be very boring if we just waited till after the game and then talked about what happened and just, oh, you know, we'll talk to you in September. So we got to, you know, we do a little speculation.
Angel, if USC makes the playoffs, would everyone still say that Clay is incompetent if they make the playoffs?
No, I think he'd win more people over. They were saying that early, and then he made the, you know, won the Rose Bowl, and then he won a lot of people back. But even the you know, the Cotton Bowl year, there was just still a lot of detractors. So if he ended up making the playoff by changing the offense and stuff like that, yeah, he would win a lot of the people back. Now, there's still some people that would be like, nope, he's terrible, and that's never going to change. But there's the independent, you know, vote, the middle ground, the undecideds have pretty much gone off the Clay Helton bandwagon. They would, a lot of those would come back on if you made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some people still think Gus Malzahn is a terrible quarterback. I mean, a terrible coach, even though they won a national championship.
Yeah. No, they didn't. He didn't. No, he made it to the championship and lost to Florida State. Yeah.
Some people still think it's terrible. Is John Jackson really good, or are they just thin at wide receiver? A little bit of combination. I mean, we haven't, like, in the one-on-ones, he doesn't go against scholarship guys because there's that limited numbers. So he dominates the one-on-ones. But he's also made plays on the second team and stuff. We haven't seen him on the first team necessarily. So it's a little bit of a combination
there. Yeah.
We'll see in the fall more.
I mean, he was a good player and stuff in high school. I think he can, you know, he's just got to develop and grow, and I think he will.
He's like Deontay Burnett light to me.
Yeah.
You know, I think Deontay Burnett's probably a little bit better of an athlete, but both of them catch the ball really well.
Yeah, but a heavier version of Deontay Burnett.
Yes.
Even though he's Deontay Burnett light.
Yes. That's correct.
Funny, Ryan.
Thanos asks, who of the potential undrafted USC players will make an instant impact in the NFL?
Instant impact. Undrafted?
You don't usually make an instant impact as a bit undrafted player.
That's tough.
That would be, well, maybe somebody is a kick returner or a special teams maven, and I don't think there's a Soma Vanuku in this group.
Yeah.
But if I'm guessing, if I'm just making a guess, I would go with the Jenny Harris because he's very versatile.
He
can play on special teams. He can return if you need him to. He can do a lot of different things.
Yeah, he could get into a camp and be like, wow, this guy can make the roster. So that's a good call.
Jumping in with a Facebook question, Ryan, you started this. Desi on Facebook says, do you think USC would do a mid-season firing if USC gets off to a bad start?
It's very tough first six games. I've said this before on the show. I think last year, Lynn Swann was not going to make a change at head coach. I think this year, just gut feeling, he's much more open to it. If they start off like 2-4, I could see that happening.
Interesting.
Just my take. Some people say no. But you would have asked me last year if they go 5-7, is he going to be fired? You'd say 100% yes. Yep. That didn't happen. But my gut is 2-4 start. There's going to, you know, with the new Coliseum, not a lot of people showing up. The home games are going to be poorly attended. More, you know, there'll be more fans from opponents there. I think there would be a lot of pressure with a new president, and there would have to be some sort of change. That's if Liz Wan is still the athletic director at that point. Like, we don't know. You got a new president coming in July. Like, that might change. Three of his employees were arrested by the Fed. So, there could be a change there. So then who knows at that point?
Yep.
Killer B, when will this year's class report to campus? That will be, depending on when they start summer classes, will be in June or July. Some of them go to the first grouping of classes the first month. Some of them come for the July ones. So they'll be here in the summer, almost all of them. Maybe one or two are stragglers sometimes. They only show up in the fall. How are the DBs taking to the new DB coach? You talked to Greg Burns. What did you think?
Yeah, no, it seems to be well. That, he doesn't have a lot of dudes to work with. You got walk-ons in the first team, but it seems like just a little bit different approach. It seems like he's doing a pretty good job. And the players we talked to seem to like what he brings to the table. I think it's going to be hard to judge them until you get all the dudes in the fall. That's really a group you want to watch when everyone's there, more people are healthy, and he'll have a lot more depth to deal with when fall camp rolls around.
Two more questions. Who's going to be the hardest game of the year for us?
Probably at Washington.
That is a long road trip for us. You know, if it's for us.
Oh, for was it?
Or for us.
It said for us.
No.
It didn't say for the team.
I'm assuming he's
for
us. He's talking about the USC football team. Not us. at Washington. Like, that's a playoff contender. Yeah. USC.
In September, too. It's weird timing.
Yeah, USC beat them 2016, and that was, you know, a year that the Washington made the playoffs. But Washington's a more talented team than they were then. They're, you know, Chris Peterson's going more from OKGs are kind of guys to 4- and 5-star. You know, they have a higher ranked recruiting class than USC this past year for the first time ever, I think.
And they have a quarterback this year.
They have a, you know, Jacob Eason, but I don't even know if he's been the best quarterback up there. But yes, they, you know, they had a limitation. Yeah, Jake Browning was a limitation in a lot of different ways. But yeah, I think that's going to be the toughest game. What do you think? I mean, Notre Dame, right? That's going to be tough too. But I think Washington early in the season. Notre Dame's like game 6, right? At Notre Dame.
It's usually in the October.
I think it's the 6th game. I think it's the last of the first 6 that are tough because you got, you know, Fresno State at home, BYU on the road, Utah at home, Stanford is at home on the road.
It's home.
Stanford's at home.
Stanford home, Washington on the road, and Notre Dame on the road. I
believe. Yeah, I would agree. Shotgun, you said you have one more question?
Well, now I have two. Someone asked a second question, but someone asked, is Drake London going to play basketball or football as his main sport? He will start with the football team, and then when the season's over, he will go over to the basketball team.
Yeah.
So technically, since his scholarship is with football, he will spend more time with them, I would say. So I guess you would call that his main sport, but he's trying to be a true dual sport player. Now, if 2 years in, football's not going well and basketball is, I wouldn't be surprised if he switched over there. Same thing if 2 years in, basketball's not going well, football is. So, because I think if he were to stick to one or the other, I think he could go pro in either sport.
Wow.
I think he's that talented. But we'll see how it plays out when you're trying to do both of them. Maybe it works all out for him. The last question was from Jasper. Ryan, those cookies in your analogy, are they Oreo double stuff or Chips Ahoy?
Oh, well, definitely Oreo over Chips Ahoy. Like, I love chocolate chip cookies, but Chips Ahoy are just kind of like Oreo double stuff.
Chewy Chips Ahoy.
Those are good. Ugh. I mean, they're all right.
Get out of here.
They kind of taste waxy a little bit. But for the Oreo, you got the double stuff Oreo. You take one of the pieces, the chocolate pieces off, eat that or throw it away. Then the other one, you make it a quadruple stuff and you put it together.
Wow.
That's next level.
You could actually buy them that way now.
They have ultra thin, ultra stuff. They have every configuration of Oreo doesn't make any sense.
Peanut butter and jelly, red velvet, doesn't matter the flavor, peeps flavored.
Yeah, and we're coming off Easter, like the best Easter candy, so don't at me, but you got the Cadbury mini eggs are freaking awesome.
They're so good.
Cadbury mini eggs are like M&M's on steroids, and I love M&M's. And then the Cadbury cream eggs are freaking awesome too. So now the peanut butter ones, I brought some in for the crew, the Reese's peanut butter eggs. Those are, you know, that's strong. But the Cadbury ones, like, I love those.
I have some rapid-fire USC-related questions on Facebook if you want to get to
that. We should probably wrap it up.
Yes.
Chicks, ducks, and bunnies, sweet tarts. That's just me.
Sweet tarts?
Oh, yeah.
He brings sweet tarts to practice. It's weird.
I like sugar.
I mean, they're fine, but chocolate's where you got to go.
Pooter Williams says, who will be the big standout on this team?
Big standout.
Michael Pittman.
Yeah.
Amon-Ra.
Drake Jackson.
Christian Rector.
Kalia Nyatiote.
Amon-Ra.
Amon-Ra could be.
We're going to have to narrow that focus because football is a 22-person game.
Yeah.
So
Ben Griffiths.
It's hard to say just one person. You know, I don't think that USC is going to have a Heisman contender unless it's Stephen Carr.
Yeah, your whole prediction, Shotgun.
From 3 years ago, okay?
Yeah. We have multiple questions about who's going to replace who. Glenn says, who will replace Porter Gustin and get sacks this season? James says, who will replace Chuma Adoga?
Chuma Adoga, Jalen McKenzie, has taken over his spot and his number. He's now number 70 and playing right tackle, so he's there as of now. We'll see if anybody gets in that mix. Clayton Bradley, Bernard Schirmer, the mysterious mystery of Bernard Schirmer, who's not been around
anywhere.
Where
is he?
Those are the two guys that have a chance of getting in the mix on that first team offensive line, but right now I wouldn't say that anyone's getting in there. And then
Christian Rector
and Drake Jackson. I think Drake Jackson will have a set role where he will rush the quarterback as well, but Christian Rector needs to have a big season, and I think he will.
And don't sleep on Connor Murphy. He can sneak in there too.
Yeah.
Can you really sneak in anywhere with a long flowing red mullet?
Yeah, 6'7" and a big mullet.
True. You know? Not much sneaking for Mr. Murphy. One final question, and it goes to our buddy Michael Castillo of Reno Troy.
Oh, very.
And he says, what is Shotgun's favorite cap? Dun, dun, dun.
Favorite what?
Cap.
Hat.
Hat. Oh. Well, this one's a good one. Which one's the wedding hat?
It's his wedding hat.
Oh, it's the wedding hat, yeah. So it's got pizza, California, Georgia, and what's the other one?
And the date on the
rings. No, the rings. Oh, yeah, he's got the date on.
It's a good hat. I also have a...
You admitted to being married. Is it the first time?
So it's a wedding hat. I didn't say dun, that. I got married. Also, digital camouflage one that I wear all the time.
Which one is that?
The
light blue one that has little dots.
One
I like the grays one that you had.
That's a good one too.
Which one's that?
That's Homestead like, Grays.
Homestead Grays.
I like your old school Angels one.
So
I'm biased.
I think this question came up because I finally counted them all up because we were moving apartments and I have about 180 right now.
180 hats.
Wow. There you have it.
You need like a room for that. Like that's not even like it's not even like a it's not a drawer.
It goes
it's
in
a,
two bags. Two bags and they're done.
Two like
two duffel bags.
That's
like a gym
crazy.
Duffel bag. That's two of them. That's it. That's all it took.
A lot of hats. And what size are you? What size?
7 3/8. If anybody wants to send some to the show.
Yep.
Yeah, because he needs. He's only. He got
to
get
he
the
needs
200.
More. He gets to 200. Well, legendary Lurch Logan says J2Fele as a standout. I think that's a good call as well.
Yeah.
People really liked your performance tonight, Ryan.
Really?
Yeah, they said, Ryan, you crushed this tunnel vision.
I didn't get it either.
Thanks. No, it's, you know, but I get it.
Don't feed his ego,
look,
people.
My first job out of from USC, like my first engineering job, Gary Wong hired me at Hughes Aircraft Company. He was only hiring USC people. Like, I get the Trojan Network. It's real. But you can't just, you know, if he hired me to be an engineer and I was a dental student, like that wouldn't make any sense. And that's what USC's been doing. Like, let's hire USC people. Have they done the job we want to hire? No, but let's hire them anyway because they're USC people. Like, that's got to stop. If you find an amazing athletic director candidate who happened to like be a grad student at USC at some point, yeah, that's fine. Yes, I'm not. I mean, really, just joking about that. They don't have to have zero ties, but you can't base it on they went to USC. That has to stop.
Yes, mini rant. Thank you.
Mini rant again.
You have a performance critique from Killa B Shotgun. He says he needs a little more attitude next week from you. You're better when you're pissed off, apparently.
Keely brings that out of me during our podcast. Yeah. So.
It's my job. Alrighty. That's going to wrap it up. Like I said, next week, special guest, India, the new drum major, is going to be on the show. So make sure you turn into that.
I wonder if she can bring the sword.
That'll be fun. That'll be cool.
Yeah. That'd be dangerous in here.
So bring your questions and all that good stuff. Alrighty, that's going to wrap it up. That's Shotgun. That is Ryan. I'm Keely. We'll see y'all next week.
See ya.